Welcome to week one of Statistics 222 Longitudinal Research, our remote asynchronous instruction. I'm David Ragosa. Remember, there was a week zero set of slides and audio companion. That's simply the first 15 minutes of what I would say in the first in-class lecture. So this is the first part of content, but you should probably listen to week zero beforehand, and it talks about how we're doing this course. Right now, what we have to work with is two items, the set of PDF slides, which is file 20lect1.pdf, 87 pages, and the accompanying audio companion, which I break up into a couple of parts, often to encourage people to take a break. That's one of the advantages of remote asynchronous instruction, is you can stop and catch your breath, as opposed to having 2 hours of a fire hose. And so that's where we are. So what week one and subsequent weeks consist of is me walking you through the lecture slides. These are the PDF slides I would show in class, along with making annotations on the board. We lose that part, but we get what I say and what I show. And that's hopefully a good start on mastering this material. So starting on page one of the PDF, and I'll try to do good navigation and talk through it, we have from the preliminary course outline, or the course outline. Week one is course overview. We kind of did that. Longitudinal research, a little bit of intro, and the main topic analysis of individual histories and growth trajectories. And the idea here is to ease into the course, especially in the in-person version of the course. Week one, beginning of week one, fall quarter is chaotic. You don't want to try to do too much the first week and have the course run away from people, because there's lots of moving bodies. So the way I designed this was week one was kind of easing into things. We're bringing in people from different backgrounds, some more technical, some more empirical research, and giving people an opportunity to collect everything together and see where we're going. And so week one kind of focuses on a little bit of deep review under the rubric of analysis of individual histories, which for rates of change, individual trajectories can be as simple as fitting a straight line, and it's good to see that, but you don't need to see that, and going on to more complicated forms of trajectory and model fitting, some of which we'll use more than others. So that's the idea here. So some of this is designed as review or orientation. We got to start someplace. And so we're going to start as minimalist as possible and build up. So that's what the course outline tells us. And then under our texts and resources, I yellow highlighted the items that we're drawing from in this collection of slides and narration, a little bit from the Harvard Biostat book, a little bit from Doug Bates. We'll see both from his book and talk slides, which are always very good. Moving on to page two of the PDF, also pulling from the original Bates-Pinheiro text when R was S. Before there was R, there was S. And the appendix especially, which does the more complicated nonlinear growth curves that we should mention, but we won't spend a lot of time on because we can only do so much. Peter Diggle has a set of examples, and Verbeke has a lot of good stuff, and we draw a couple little examples for him. So that's where we are on page two of the PDF. You've presumably got R going. We'll show you some R today. The examples are fully worked out and also condensed in handout form. So moving on to page three, which is really the real content, week one, first class. So here we are, page three. We're getting going at 4 minutes. So the right box, we're at the top right of this slide. You obviously have seen that. Lecture slides, week one, and the audio companion broken in parts. You want both of those. available. You could either have both in separate browser windows so you can control the audio, i.e. pause it when you need a break or go back, and scrolling through the PDF slides. You could also download the audio and use your media player to control it with a little bar. That's convenient depending on how much screen size you have. You could also keep a browser window open for these various links. So we have longitudinal research overview under lecture topics, some illustrations of little toy examples why we do longitudinal research, why cross-sectional, or sampling different people at different ages doesn't quite give you the information you need, and then model fitting for individual trajectories. And in week two, where you could argue we could start the course if we wanted to really jump in, we're fitting collections of individual trajectories. You can see the logic of, well, let's get real familiar with fitting individual trajectories before we look at a collection of individuals. So that's where we are. One item that's throughout the course is there's every week there's some class handout. And in the in-class version of the course, that really means pieces of paper that I take the time to hand out to everybody because it's good to have a momentary breath. And those are always posted also, and you could think about printing those out. The main course handout is somewhat cryptic. It's in the annotated version. There's an ASCII version that you could use to recreate the computing, ASCII meaning plain text. And so you could just cut and paste that into R or even make yourself a script. And then there's a longer PDF version that has all the plots, but those are also included in the lecture. And then the data sets we draw from, and they're all scrunched in one download because some of them are rather simple. And then we also have, for those of you who may want to be maybe starting R from scratch, doing a bit of this from the very beginning, i.e. download R, install packages, obtaining data. We do that for the sleep study example. But what circled the what's called annotated version, that's the four-page handout, 3 pages of annotated output, i.e. the computing I did edited down for to fit in the space, and then I scrawl notes on them. And so you have the ASCII, which is untouched by me. And so those are that. And then we have some additional items, especially for the count data AIDS cases. There's a Rugosa R session and also the textbook example from Simon Wood. So we have a number of things to look at. We'll call upon them as we go through the lecture slides. The lecture slides are just taken from all these items. And then, of course, as mentioned, in week zero, we have review questions with solutions and exercises which we'll draw from for our class problem set. So that's where we are. Page 3 is chock full of stuff. This is the routine we'll be in. I didn't include in the news items because those are fun to do, showing you that longitudinal research questions are current. You can look at past versions of the course and see lots of those. There is difficulty with Stanford access since we can't be on campus to get at all the journals. So it seemed like one of those things where we have to admit we have to slough some stuff in these difficult times. Okay, page 4 just continues on to the exercises. We have a couple of those which are candidates for the class problem set. And you'll see those every week. Okay, class 5 actually begins some content in the course. So on PDF page 5 of our lecture slides, we have a couple of slides from the Harvard Biostat course. The Laird Ware Fitzmaurice book has a set of PDF slides, I think about 400 or 500, going along with the book. So they give you a book and a course, and there's version 1 and version 2 of the book, but the slides are pretty much the same. And these are the introductory slides from their book, just introducing longitudinal research, where we have repeated measures on individuals. That is, we have an individual trajectory. It could be a measurement, it could be a state, an on-off state, alive, dead, or it could be a height, weight, or cognitive functioning measure. And design, analysis, interpretation of longitudinal studies. We use R. They use SAS at Harvard, but they switched over to R. And we're not doing much calculus, just a little bit today for rates of change. You'll see that. So page 6 of the lecture slides, continuing with the Harvard notes, repeated observations on individuals, allowing the direct study of change. That is, we get a fairly easy measure of improvement for each person, and then we can compare people or ask about systematic relationships of change to background characteristics. That is, we're measuring the same thing. That's a hard thing in psychology. Even math achievement can change over time, whether or not you're facile with word problems. The last item we will have a different view of. We think it's pretty simple, but you can make it hard. And that has been done over the years. We'll try to show you that it's actually relatively simple as long as you think about things right. Continuing on with Harvard slides, continuous or measured outcomes are the most common, but equally important are counts, and we'll do counts today, and binary 0-1 outcomes, good, poor, lung functioning, for example, counts, number of AIDS cases or number of COVID cases. And so we'll do all three kinds of outcomes, measured outcomes, counts, and 0-1 outcomes. We don't need to have the same number of observations on each person or have them measured at the same time. And that's the extension of new statistical methods versus good old repeated measures analysis of variance, which some of your advisors probably still do, and it's perfectly fine. This subsumes our repeated measures analysis of variance, kind of things we're going to do with growth curves, and concepts, model building, software interpretation are all good things to know about. Okay, switching over or keeping to this rather basic introduction to longitudinal data, just to show you sources we're drawing from. This is from one of Doug Bates's talks, kind of given lots and lots and lots of workshops, and they're all linked. And he has the same sort of story. Longitudinal data, repeated measures on page 8 of the PDF file, which the observations are taken over time. Want to characterize response over time within subjects and the variation in time trends between subjects. We're only going to look at one subject at a time today. Week 2, we get really going. And we're not necessarily interested in the subjects we have. More, we're interested in them as samples from a population of interest. And that will get us into fixed and random effects. There on page 9 is a picture of Doug Bates. He's at Madison. He's one of the heroes of the course because he wrote LME or NLME before that. Now he does Julia. He left R because of their, let's say, central office's overreach. But LME4 is the package that we'll be downloading and using. That's the mixed effects models standard package. There are many alternatives. In the spring, I teach a workshop course on mixed effects models in R. And that's STAT 196. You can get it from Rigosa Teaching if you want to look at some of the additional examples. That's page 9 of the PDF. Salute to Doug Bates. Okay, here is a simple longitudinal example. As I say, we're still trolling, kind of treading water, letting people get comfortable and starting with these little simple examples, but they're good to see at least once. You may have seen them a lot of times. So the Diggle example, we start out with reading ability and age, and we have 6 data points. And these could be sampled from 6 different people, in which case you can't say anything about individuals, but you could try to get a group growth curve. Group growth curve can be quite misleading. And his illustration is these 6 points could come from 6 different people, or they could come from 2 observations on 3 different people, showing you no matter what age you start at, you go up under this reading curriculum, although at age 8, you're lower than you were at age 5. That must be the LA schools were peak is at second grade when I used to do the API scores. Or these could come from three observations on two individuals, both of whom are declining fast. Again, perhaps LA Public Schools. At first and second grade, they're doing reasonably well and then take a dive. That's sad, but true. It's good to know. I still have the data. Okay, so that's page 10. You can see the value of knowing what individuals we have repeated measures on. They're not six different points. They give us very different ideas. Having specific individuals and repeated measures on them is the key information to asking about growth and change. Okay, Verbeke, again, has a similar set of examples. You could consider this a cross-sectional study where you picked up, a dozen people at different ages, and response might be their success at a test score or any other task, and you can see it seems to be declining with age. But these could be not just one point per individual. Longitudinal data could be quite different. Again, everybody's improving. They're just those that started out older are started at a much lower level. It's kind of a cooked example. Now there doesn't seem to be necessarily a negative relation. Or here could be the individuals. That is the very simple point that we're overkilling on, because everybody does these kind of examples at the beginning of their presentations, is you need to know whose data is followed over time. You need the individual, the starting point is the individual trajectory, and we're going on from that. But this gets tiresome. Probably shouldn't have done both examples. Longitudinal data allow you to distinguish differences between subjects from changes within subjects, and that's what we're interested in. Growth curves for babies and things like that. A famous data set, just to get us, and this will be something we take up next week. There's a lot of mandibular ramus and other jaw measurements that are easy to come by. You have here Potthoff and Roy is a famous group growth curve paper, repeated measures analysis of variance from 50 some years ago. And so we have a jawbone measurement, and every 2 years, 27 people, and we have a gender background characteristic, some girls, some boys. And we want to know who's growing and does one gender grow faster, for example. And we have individual profiles on page 16 of the PDF, separately for girls and boys. These I call spaghetti plots. They're connect the dots plots. We'll learn how to do this. Or an alternative is the straight line fit to 4 points, and showing that using the straight line fit to each person to smooth the longitudinal record, if that seems useful. And for example, the sleep study example, long distance truckers reaction times will be the canonical example for that. So here's a collection of longitudinal data stratified on gender, and you can see it's going up. Maybe boys are increasing faster than girls. We can certainly quantify that with basic statistical techniques, and that'll be next week, doing both basic descriptive and full mixed effects models for these kind of longitudinal panel data. That is short time series on each individual, and that's one of the key ideas. We typically in life science and social science have a few observations. It might be 4, it might be 20 on each individual, or something close to that, and we're fitting some sort of trajectory. We don't have the level of detail, maybe the level of measurement that you would at a time series on us in a lab example, for example. Okay, 17, there's much variability between children. Within children, the fixed number of measurements taken at fixed time points, those are all obvious. Okay, now here's an example. I think it's obligatory this quarter. We have some COVID data. And so here's some here's a trajectory, not on an individual, but on an individual city. So it's an individual unit. Not longitudinal data can be from a observation post, whether it be air pollution, wind, etc. Here is Palo Alto over the course of the last couple months, at least 3 months, May to August. And you can see the trajectory looks like these are cumulative number of cases. So it's basically flat, maybe two per week up till third week of June. And then it takes off and it's 10, 12 a week. And you could debate the causes of that, but you can see this isn't quite a constant rate of change, full trajectory. It looks like it's a change point type thing. Or you could consider it a curvature, a polynomial, or you could consider it, and we'll look at this later, the beginnings of the logistic curve. That is, we have the flat asymptote, we have the trend upwards, and then maybe we're getting into an upper asymptote at 200 or something like that. That wouldn't be so great. That would be a leveling off of cases. Notice this is cumulative number of cases. When we do the AIDS data, we're going to do number of new cases per week or per month. And so to get that data, we'd have to do first differences here. So you can see it before 0, 1, 2, 2, 4, and then it starts getting bigger. And diff, D-I-F-F, we'll do that for you in R. You might want to try that out. Maybe we'll try some exercises with these data. And of course, cases could be influenced by amount of testing. So hospitalizations are probably a better measure of how bad things are getting. And there aren't many. Certainly in July, I can say from testimony, there was one COVID case, I think, in Stanford Hospital at times. So not that many hospitalizations. Here's cases. This could be more testing. The end up, but it's a good curve. Could be a polynomial. Could be logistics. Not just a simple constant rate of change model. Here's another longitudinal trend. It's different cohorts. So if we take the birth rates for women age 15 to 19, you could stratify 15, 17, and 18, 19. You can see more teenage pregnancies back when I was born than relatively current days. That's an interesting theory of time. We'll get in week 5 or 6 and talk about cohorts and cohort sequential designs and age, cohort, and time of measurement confounding and things like that. But here we're looking in 1980, birth rate was about 60 for per 1,000 for 15 to 19. And in 2010, these are different, of course, females, it's closer to 40 or so. For 15 to 19s, and of course it's higher for 18, 19 than 15, 17s, and one would expect that. So that's just a different kind of longitudinal time trend. This was always the CDC data. It was always a fun thing to look at. And so the dictum that we'll run under is page 20, and I think that's where we'll take a pause and end part A. At 20-some minutes. Our starting out is the individual trajectory is a key starting point for conceptualization modeling data analysis. We want to model the process, generate the individual's data, and then look at collections of individual. But we're always going to start with the individual trajectory. Could be an on-off trajectory, could be measured data like the COVID cases. So right now, we'll pause.